Hi! Go ahead and activate your fetch on my end step. Pay no attention to the untapped mana. Nothing bad will happen. I promise. Kira!
Warped Quadrant Middler. Draw two. Ephemerate. Draw two. Michael!
We are continuing our long tradition of having committee members on the podcast today. I am joined by competitive player and member of the Highlander Committee, Michael Billinghurst. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, for people who are unfamiliar with Highlander, people who are more either just regular competitive constructed or commander players, what is the Highlander Committee?
Sure. So, the Highlander Committee is a group of people who organize the rules for Australian 7-point Highlander. It's a community format that's been going in Australia for almost 30 years now, right since the beginning of Magic, basically. And we help manage the rules. We decide the points, but also do a lot of work around community outreach, managing the format, keeping the website up to date, making sure information's available.
How long has 7-point Highlander been around as a format? Because as it's a community format, but how long has that been around?
Yeah, so its origins are in... So back in 1993, there was an article in Wizards magazine about Highlander as an idea of Magic, singleton format, that eventually went on to become Elder Dragon Highlander, amongst other things. And in Canberra, a couple of players read that article, and they started their own format of what was at the time originally a singleton vintage format that quickly became a pointed format because they didn't like playing singleton vintage and it was too powerful. And then that spread down to Melbourne, and then they had a 10-point Canberra Highlander and a 5-point Melbourne Highlander.
Sure.
And then eventually unified to be a 7-point Highlander.
Split the difference,
except that Melbourne had to win, so it's 7-point because that's closer to 5.
Oh, okay. So there's a world in which we would have had, what is it?
8-point Highlander. So oh. I guess if you think about it.
But we do have 8-point Highlander.
Yeah, the non-reservalist players, they're playing Canberra Highlander, really.
That's okay. So this is similar to like in Australian history where like Melbourne wanted to be the capital of Australia, Sydney wanted to be the capital of Australia, so Canberra became the capital.
And in that time, Sydney won because Canberra's closer to Sydney. But this time Melbourne wins.
Oh, okay. So much history in a Magic format that I couldn't have expected. And how long has the points system existed then?
It's close to that long. In its 7-point form where it is now, I think it was about 2000, but you have to check with the format historians.
But that's basically
about then, 25 years.
And that's almost as long as Magic's been around.
Yeah, close to.
Fantastic. So why does Highlander have a committee?
Because it's a community format. That's it. It's like a lot of other formats managed by wizards. I mean, and some of those even have committees of their style. But we want to manage the format ourselves. It's for us, for local players, trying to make it as fun as possible and to keep the local community like really engaged with the health and nature of the format. You know, like we're very close to the players. If you have opinions on the way that the format plays or the experience that you have, you can very easily reach people who are involved in making decisions of that format. And so I think we try really hard to keep it a format that is best suited for the people who are playing it and up to date and accessible for those people.
How long have you been on the committee?
A bit over 3 years now, 3.5 years, I think.
Wow.
Feels like a lot longer.
Each year is 10 years. This is like every, you know, how long in committee years has it been?
Yeah.
Emotionally,
so many.
What makes the Highlander Committee so successful as a community-led format? Because we've seen Commander and, you know, CEDH, Commander had the Commander Format Panel, and CEDH has tried who knows how many times to create some sort of community-led, you know, rules or ban list group. You know, what makes the Highlander Committee so successful in that way? If it's been around for 20 years, what makes that so successful?
It's passion is one thing. And just like a lot of thought has gone into the people who are involved and the way they want to be involved. And people are willing to give a lot of energy and effort and then step back when they're not able to do that anymore. So that everyone who is involved cares a lot, super engaged, and really wants the best for the format and for the players of the format. Mm-hmm. They're not in there for themselves or for clout or for trying anything other than just making the best format possible with all the energy they have available at the time.
So the one question kind of dovetails into the other. why are you on the committee?
So I, like, we have an application process, June 2022, where people who I respected had stepped away from the committee, and they put an application process out, and I thought, I really care about this format, and I really want it to succeed, and I think that I'm in a position to be able to help that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, felt like kind of like my duty to the community that I love is like to be involved and to make it as good as I can. And so I said, hey, like, if you'll have me, if you want my input and you think that I'd be good at this, like, please let me help. And as long as I think that I'm still helping, I'd like to keep doing that.
Because it doesn't seem like a job for the faint of heart.
Oh, no. It's a lot. It's on all the time. You have to be available to people and discussions a lot and have a pretty thick skin when decisions that you think are right are not popular. But it's also, like, rewarding in a way that, like, I think generally we do a good job. And every time someone comes away from a tournament and says, like, hey, I had a really good time, or I started playing Highland and I think it's really cool and it's awesome that this format exists, I can be like, I'm really happy that I get to be a part of that and to help make it good.
Yeah. So kind of, what does the committee do beyond, like, you know, this ephemeral idea of, like, stewarding the format? What does the committee actually do?
And so the biggest thing is we do points updates. So it's currently, the schedule is every Sunday of a pre-release, but not quite locked into that. So, like, four times a year historically, might be slightly more than that now, we'll do an update where we say, hey, as of this day, points have changed. This card is worth one more point. This card is worth one less point. Really, like, ban list management, but at a more granular level. And that's the core of it. Beyond that, it's about making sure that we're in touch with the community so we can make decisions correctly. We can get feedback from people and making sure that people who are playing a lot of events or turning up to their first event feel like they are heard and that the format is designed for them as well.
This is, I think, is going to be somewhat of a controversial question. What doesn't the committee do?
We don't run events. that's the biggest thing. Like, we're not tournament organizers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we do the rules for the event, and we do some community management for it. And I would say this, one of our team members is a tournament organizer, but in a separate capacity.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we don't decide whether you're allowed to play gold bordered cards or playtest cards. We don't decide what sets are legal, although I guess we could, or, like, when you should have events or what the prizes are or anything like that. Our job is to make a format that's fun to play and promote that format and listen to feedback on that format. But in terms of events and things, we do our best, but that's not our role.
So interestingly, you touch on something there that I think would surprise people because, you know, we've made a big deal out of saying, like, you know, Wizards doesn't own this format. It's a community-driven format. But we still adhere to the guidelines of Wizards, you know, as the stewards of the vintage format, yeah, because that's the rule set that it falls under. And kind of what, you know, you just mentioned in a really interesting idea of, like, well, I guess we could allow, like, gold-bordered cards. Like, what kind of drives then, like, you know, where is the line drawn between community managed and Wizards still owns Magic?
Yeah, I mean, Wizards owns Magic, right? Wizards wants to sanction events. Stores want to run events that work with Wizards. We want to give a format for stores to run in the way that works for them, or for TOs to run the way that works for them. The vintage ban list is something we've inherited because it's convenient. That, like, every card that's on that list is on that list for a very good reason that is separate from its power level.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really convenient, rather than trying to maintain that ourselves, to be like, yeah, we'll use that one.
Mm-hmm.
But there was considerations for a time of deviating from that when Luris got banned in vintage very briefly.
Oh.
Where it was still allowed in Highlander. And we were like, hey, do we want to fix that? Because we have a different tool for power level than Vintage does. And then, so, like, hey, can we can consider deviating from that. And so, like, if there was power level bans in Vintage, maybe it would stop being convenient. But for now, because it's all, like, cards that we don't want to see in our format either, it's really convenient to have that ban list be inherited. But it's by convention rather than requirement.
I think something that's really funny is, you know, it uses the vintage banned and restricted list, and restricted, for those who are unfamiliar, is the idea that you can only play one copy, which in a singleton format, yeah. Oh no.
I guess technically we do use the restricted list. Yeah, it's true.
It's true. We are restricted to one copy, but that's also, like, a facet of the format itself, not just that Wizards has said so. So the way that the committee functions is, you know, stewards of the community, you know, making sure that the format exists in a healthy way. And you briefly touched on this idea of, like, you know, there's going to be decisions that are unpopular. Kind of how do you mitigate? Because something that I think happens is you have regional bias.
Yeah.
Because my understanding, and feel free to explain, is that, you know, Highlander is a national format. It's Australian Highlander, not Melbourne Highlander, yeah, or not Sydney Highlander or Canberra Highlander. And each different regional area tends to play Highlander a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And so how do you mitigate balancing the needs, wants, desires, you know, likes, dislikes of a country of Magic players?
It's hard. One of the things is we just try and make sure we have community members spread out through different play groups. At the moment, we have one in Adelaide, one in Wollongong, one who's based in Canberra, me in Melbourne, and then one who's also based in Melbourne, but is more focused on the online scene for Highlander.
Yeah.
And so we've spread out that way geographically to get more eyes on the metagame, and also making sure that we're, like, very available in non-physical ways. You know, mm-hmm, like, there's the Discord, we get all our feedback. People are always welcome to DM me. I think any of us, but I won't speak for other people. But for me, at least, my DMs are always open if you want to talk Highlander and talk shop. And there's big events we go to. You know, we try and get, most of us try to get to all the big events where the metagames come together, and be approachable by people who are there. But it is a challenge, and I think there's a well-known story from 5-10 years ago of Skullclamp being the most divisive card ever.
Really?
Where it was, I think, at 2 points at the time, but maybe one, but where Melbourne thought it was the best card in the format at its current level, and Zoo was almost unbeatable, and Canberra thought that it was unplayable. And the committee at the time, being spread across mostly those two states, was a deadlock of, like, this card needs to go up versus this card needs to go down. So metagames can vary a lot across regions.
Well, and that, you know, that seems really indicative of the way that people engage with the format. You know, most people, when they play weekly, are not going, you know, if I'm in Melbourne, I'm not flying to Sydney to go play a weekly. I'm going to play here, you know, and currently the metagame in Melbourne is very strong towards Grixis and Storm.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a lot of outcry for, you know, Black Lotus to 5. Like, I'm insisting on it now. I think the most recent one that's come up is Brainstorm needs to be pointed, finally. And so, you know, I can't imagine being in the position of having to take, again, like, the desires into account and then apply that realistically to managing a format.
Yeah, it's hard. I think one of the things is, like, it's not, like, it's community managed, but when I say community managed, it's like it's managed by the committee as a community, mm-hmm, for the community. It's not managed by the community as a whole. You know, we don't vote on stuff. And part of it is, like, we believe that we're perhaps a little more in touch and more equipped to make those decisions than the average Magic player. We put a lot of time and energy into making decisions. And so we have to do it really on, like, our understanding of the format. And we take a lot of feedback. And I think basically if anyone has ever discussed a points change with me, it's then been discussed by me with a different committee member. Like, it does get to us.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's, like, really on our judgment. And so sometimes it's, like, you know, in one store, you know, a year ago, Richard was winning with Black Lotus at plenty of games playing Storm, but no one else is winning anywhere else. And so it's like, well, I think it's really good, but that doesn't mean that it is really good or that it's really good for everyone in the format as a whole. And so trying to find that balance is really hard.
I love this format.
It's so good.
It's great. It's great starting to be involved and be around better players like yourself. Like, you have been really instrumental in, like, playing with me and helping me be a better Magic player. And I feel like that's, you know, a quality shared amongst a lot of committee members, is this idea of, if you're going to steward the community, you need to be really involved and you need to be visible, accessible, and understanding of how the format plays.
Yeah.
You know, there are, you know, I would love to sit here and say opposition agent needs to be pointed because one time JD, you know, opposition agent my fetched and I'd never been so angry in my entire life, you know. But the experience of players versus the committee members seems very, very different. How do you find mitigating, you know, your own biases in that way?
It's really tough. I think that one of the things that I try to do is I'm very engaged with the online community space. Like, you can find me in public points discussion almost every day. I talk to a lot of people about a lot of things. And a lot of that is about, like, defending my preconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think that this card is really good or this card is really bad. And if I can't find ways to reason that out and explain why I think that thing and at least have people agree to disagree with me, then maybe I should take that back to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of the time I'm like, people say something, I'm like, I think this. And people are like, that seems wrong. And I'll explain it. And sometimes they're like, I get where you're coming from. Sometimes they're like, that's stupid. I'm like, maybe it is stupid. Maybe I don't know. And then amongst the community members, like, we're all doing that all the time. And when we come to talk about it, we have discussions. And sometimes we all agree. And sometimes we aggressively disagree.
Mm.
And there are still points on the list that, like, one of us thinks is not the right call.
Yeah.
Or that one of us really championed for. But at the end of the day, like, we come to a consensus and we make agreements.
To date, mm-hmm. what do you think has been your most controversial points update?
Oh, that's tough. I think Nethergoif to one is up there because that's deeply unpopular for the section of people mm-hmm. and one that I personally championed. I don't think there are any others that were maybe Tinker down or Natural Order down were divisive because they're very like swingy cards.
Mm-hmm.
I think largely we get pretty good feedback, but I think that a couple of those sometimes, or maybe Mana Drain is another one. It was you put Mana Drain to zero and then pretty quickly put it back to one. And so there's a couple of like fairly divisive ones that have happened.
How do you find the response to, you know, something really interesting that happened is Pauper went through this trial unban period. And they unbanned, I think it was Chromatic Star, High Tide, and something else.
Yep.
And they went through this trial unban period, and in a way that's somewhat similar to pointing or depointing something. How do you find the response to that? Because the response to High Tide getting unbanned and then rebanned about 4 or 5 months later was largely negative. People were like, whoa, what the heck? Like, you unbanned it only to ban it, and it was, you know, this is so annoying. Like, I had rebuilt my Pauper decks around this. How do you find, you know, mitigating this, you know, the responses to pointings?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think one of the things I say all the time is, like, the points list has inertia. Mm-hmm. Like, something can be at a point that I don't think is correct, but there needs to be a reason to change it, not just that I don't think it's right where it is now. And so balancing that is hard. Like, you don't want to often depoint things and see, because that erodes trust. You know, mm-hmm. if you like, hey, we're going to put Ancestral Recall to 4 tomorrow because we don't think it's good. And people are like, I need to go buy an Ancestral Recall because it's really good now. And then they do. And then we're like, oh, oops, it's a bit too good. It's going back to 5. Like, that's really bad.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that has a really negative impact on the format. So, like, while it could come down, we have to be very sure for things like that they're going to be okay where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can make some speculative points. We've done a couple of those. But it's usually, like, we're pretty sure that this is going to stay, but it's high risk. We're never going to go, let's just depoint and see, because that people need to be confident that the format they're going to play is going to be stable and the choices they're going to make are going to be supported.
This is, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the committee is the steward of the format and they're the, you know, protectors of the points list. But so what is the points list? You know, we've mentioned a lot, like, sure. Points going up and down. What is it? What is the points list?
Points list is a collection of cards that are pointed. So, and for your Highlander deck, you get 7 or maybe 8, if you're not playing reserve list cards, points to put in your deck. And it's a collection of all the powerful cards. Highlander's often described as cube constructed. And the way that is like, you can play a bunch of powerful cards, but you only get a couple of really good ones. In the same way that in your cube, you get a couple of bombs. In this case, you're like, you get the best bombs for your deck, but you get a couple of them. And so the top end, we have like, you know, Black Lotus and Time Walk and Ancestral Recall at 4 and 5 points. And then down the bottom end, it's things that are powerful, but perhaps a little less swingy. You know,
mm-hmm.
the infamous Nethergoif at 1, Deathrite Shaman, Mana Drain, Force of Will, like really powerful cards, a lot better than their replacement, not going to dictate a game quite so much.
What does the points list do in effect then?
I think it lets people play with really powerful cards and play with cards I think are really cool. But keep the power level of the format in check. You know, we have a format that allows you to play a Black Lotus or Moxen or Time Walk, but you can't play them all together. Because if you play them all together, you get a very different format. That's vintage. There's a lot of reasons vintage is a less approachable format for a lot of people, not least of which is the price tag, but also that the games end very fast and a very different experience. And so the Pointless lets us curate a play experience without banning the cards. So you get to play with these really cool cards and play with anything you want while still maintaining a curated experience that is really like playing Magic the way we want it to be played.
How do you think the points list affects deck building within Highlander?
Heaps. Like a lot of the time, the question of like, hey, what deck are you playing? You know, bug midrange. Okay, great. What are your points?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the way people like think about their deck is like, how am I choosing to allocate my power? Do I want to play a Mox or an Ancestral Recall or, you know, some big splashy card, or am I scattering it around across a bunch of interaction, playing Mental Misstep and Force of Will and Mana Drain? Am I playing a Companion? Because the two good ones are 3 points. Like, it lets you dictate some major choices for the direction you're building your deck and shapes, like, the theme and the approach you're building very heavily.
Do you find then that makes players more active in their own deck building as opposed to just simply net decking, like in Modern or Standard?
It's hard to know. I think Singleton does that more than the points list itself. I think the points list is easy to be like, oh, for my archetype, we've agreed that these are the best points, and so that's what we're going to play. And maybe you have a quibble over the last one, but like, you know, Grixis plays these 7 points, and this is how it is, and maybe there's two other points we want to talk about. I think really it's the singleton nature of the format. It's like, you're not picking 12 cards to play and playing 4 of each. You're picking 60. And so, 40 because you got some lands. But like that means that when you get down to cards 35, 38, there's 10 cards left over. Then you're like, these are all pretty good. What do I want to do? Which exact problem do I want to solve? Do I want to play Terminate or Dreadbore? Like, do I need to kill a Planeswalker? Would I rather have an instant? And those narrow questions, I think, are really interesting parts.
I was going to say, I think what's so interesting is it seems like most people's points get locked in pretty quickly. Like, people go, oh, yeah, I really want to have, you know, if you're playing blue in some fashion, Misstep, Mana Drain, I really want to have Force of Will. You know, these are, I'm locking my points up pretty tight. And then you get down to, you know, Chain Lightning or Galvanic Discharge, Flame Slash.
Yeah, and that's fun, right? Like, the challenge. And there's so much room for, like, mastery and tuning on those last little cards. Well, it's interesting, like, decks that I've been playing recently. I played a lot of Esper and a lot of Time Orcs. Those are the two decks that I'm
surprised that you're an Esper player.
Time Orcs has, you know, you have to play Spellseeker. You have to play Time Orc. And then you have a 7th point. And I have played 8 different 7th points in that deck for different reasons. And then when at Esper for the Winter Lotus, what I played. And for 3 months, I was tuning a list with a specific 7 points. And then at the last minute, I was like, actually, I want to play Bowmasters. I think it's really good here. What do I not need?
Mm-hmm.
If I want to get to my deck, I have to cut something else. But there's no straight swap, so it's okay. If I want to get Bowmasters in, what of these points is coming out? And then what card is replacing that role so that I can get Bowmasters in because it's going into a different role? And how do I maneuver all my deck around that? And I think that's those interesting problems can be really fun too.
Well, it's like, you know, the deck build, and that's where I think like so much of the deck building is active, and so much of it requires thought and it requires intent as well. Highlander does not strike me as a format where you can kind of passively net deck and not think about what's in your 75.
I think sometimes you can. I think like there are a lot of really good players who play really good decks. And so if you want to get the best version of Grixis, you can probably do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be good. But it's also a format that's historically very underexplored, because finding the best list is incredibly hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've worked with a bunch of people to build the best Time Walks list for a bunch of events. And every time I've done that, it's looked completely different to the last one. And that multiple times I've come out of it and been like, actually, I don't know if we had got it right. And so, like, there's so many archetypes that just haven't been explored, because getting the best list takes so much iteration that you can sit there and tune a list that doesn't feel good until suddenly it is, you know? And you see it all the time with, like, Mulch has been playing Nardu, and he had 100 versions that weren't good, and then he found one that was, right? And that deck is really good now. And it just takes time, like, putting his pieces together and testing the moments, and you can find hidden gems because you just need to get just the right configuration that no one's found yet.
It's really interesting. Like, you know, it doesn't have, it has a metagame.
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't have a, what I would consider like net decking metagame in the same way that, like, you know, in standard right now, it's, you know, is it lessons and bant allies, and, you know, the decks are pretty much exactly the same across the board. Maybe there's two sideboard cards differently depending on who's favoring playing against is it or who isn't. Whereas in Highlander, it feels as though there is so much more room. Like, as you say, like, there's you know, there's probably a deck out there that hasn't even been made yet. 100%. That's one of the best decks.
Yeah. I think it's really fun. Like, and like, even beyond that, you know, you go to an event, like the other category on your Highlander metagame is 60%. Like, but even beyond that, you're like, you know, Grixis has a team, a deck that has had a lot of tuning, a lot of thing, is a pretty set 75. There might be four hard cards different. But you look at like the Jund decks from the Winter Lotus, right? And there's like 110 cards being played across the 13 lists because they do not agree on what is correct. And that they're all vastly different and have different strengths and weaknesses. And if you want to come in there and pick the exact 75 that works for you, that there's space for that. And you sit down against an opponent who goes Ignoble Hierarch, Badlands by you, and you're like, you don't actually know what's in their deck. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many cards it could be, and you get to find out.
I would say, like, you know, I say all this thing about net decking as if I did not just 100% copy Jin Hao's Blue Moon deck.
Yeah, we talked about it a lot, though.
We did, but we did talk about it a lot, and we did change many things.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. It's like, how do you want to approach this problem? Uh-huh. And because it's so customizable, it's like, maybe it is just that for you personally, these cards are better because you approach the game differently. And that's really cool, I think.
Have you ever been accused of like insider trading because you're on the committee?
Yeah.
And you are aware of when points updates are happening and what's being discussed. Has anyone ever looked at you and been like, you sold your Bowmasters before this? You know, like there's been like accusations like in like the wizard space of this happening when like Jeweled Lotus and Mana Crypt got banned. Has anyone ever like conspiracy theory?
I don't think so. I think that like for the most part, the committee aren't in that space.
Mm-hmm.
I think that now with Pat being on the committee, there is a committee member who is in that space, and he's very careful to not do that.
Yeah.
And really very publicly about like not operating in that way. But for the most part, it's like, no, it's not a problem. Like, I'm not out here trading Volumes of Magic cards. It's the financial gain in it for me is a dollar. But also the Highlander prices just don't affect card prices. That's the reality. Like,
I'm speaking more in terms of like net decking. Like, you suddenly switch what deck you're playing, and people go, "What do you know?
Do
you know?"
I say all the time, like, people say that, but like, hey, I know the points announcement most of the time, like 3 days in advance.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm changing my deck for Wednesday, okay, but like, there's no benefit to me. Like the points announcement, the points updates happen immediately. In theory, I get a little bit of edge in testing. Is the difference like? Coming into a CanCon, I get 2 extra days to test with. But the people I'm testing with don't know the difference, so it doesn't actually help very much.
Yeah.
And we're pretty careful to time our announcements to give people time to adjust to those events before major events, since we'll move them around to avoid that advantage.
Well, that's like the points update that just came out, like, was moved because you guys were all at the Winter Lotus event.
Yeah.
And you wanted to see at a huge event, like 310 people, you actually really, really desperately want that information to make the best decision for the format.
100%. I think, like, it's the biggest event we've ever had. We're pretty sure it was going to be. And so we want to go through those lists and be like, what won? What didn't win? But also, like, what cards did really well? What cards did really badly? What did we not expect that happened? You know, like, at the Winter Lotus, Storm was really good. Boss was really good. But even beyond that, it was like, Mana Vault turned up not just in Storm and Boss, but in, like, other places. I think it was in the Mono Green Landsec, I can't recall.
Hmm.
But in a bunch of other places, it was like, oh, it's just a fair ritual. And as a fair ritual, it's seeing a lot of play. And as well as being like this really powerful way, it obviously belongs. And so that's one of the cards like really obviously like, okay, cool, we need to talk about it really clearly. And like, that's one of those that cards going on too, is because it's like, oh, it's way better than we thought it was. You know, like, people have finally figured out how good it is. So, Storm, we knew it was going to be really good. It turned out it was really good. I think the worst performing player was 4-4, and then all the other players went better than that, I think. I don't remember, but there was four players into day two at 6-2 or better, two players in the top 8. of the 9 that were in the room, I think 8 that were in the room. So like massively overperformed. And we're like, okay, cool. Like that deck needs 3 points. Like it can't be the best deck at CanCon. It's been the best deck for too long. People went in knowing it was the best deck. We can't have that happen.
Mm-hmm.
How do we fix that problem?
Yeah. Sorry to Richard Owen specifically.
Yeah, sorry to Owen. I was talking to him because I stayed with him for the event on Sunday night. I'm like, your deck will not be the best deck at CanCon. We haven't figured out how that's happening yet. I want to ask you your opinion on how we should do that, but I want you to know that like we're coming for you, bud. Sorry.
This also feels like something that Richard would be like, all right, bet. And yep. He's just going to find a way to still make
it
better. Yeah,
we had a good long conversation with him of like, hey, what happens if we do this? What happens if we do this? If we put Black Lotus to fire and we put Tinker up, or we put Citadel up, what do all these things do? And so we like ended up going after the mana package hardest to challenge the deck to spread out a little bit more and make choices about what it wants to do with this last couple of points. But it was like, yeah, Richard, if we put Black Lotus to 5, what does that do? And we sat down and had to talk about it. And it was really beneficial for me to have that resource to lean on to talk about what it was going to do. And he's like, okay, cool, great. Here's my challenges. I'll figure it out, but I don't think it's going to be the best deck. And I was like, great, perfect. Sounds awesome.
Well, and that's, you know, it goes back to what you said about being like a steward of the format and actually being involved with players and speaking to archetype experts and looking at the data and not just, you know, sure, Brainstorm feels like a X point card. What does the actual results and data show us? Is Brainstorm played in every single deck that plays blue and put up results? Yes, no. And you know, being able to take that information from a huge event like CanCon is so important to making sure that the format is done and managed in a healthy way.
100%. And then beyond that, like, you know, Brainstorm's a great example. Like, this card, by all metrics, outperforms.
Mm-hmm.
It shows up a lot. It shows up consistently in every blue deck. Blue decks tend to do pretty well. It is resistant to pointing because another aspect of the thing is like, what do people want from the format? You know, people want to play a format with Brainstorm in it. And so if we can preserve that in a way that keeps the format healthy, that would be really cool. Maybe it's not possible, but for now we think it is. And so we're trying to protect that identity format. In the same way, like Highland is a format with 4-color mana bases and really good mana, and like that's an identity of the format, and we would like to protect that if we can. And like maybe that isn't always true, but where we can.
Amazing. Do you see yourself staying on the committee more long term?
I don't know. I think it's I like it. I think that I'm helping to build a better format, but it is a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
and it stops you taking a step away from Magic and from Highlander. You know, I can't take 2 months off Highlander because I'm getting tired of it. I want to do other things. I need to be engaged. I need to be involved in the community. I need to turn up to locals.
Yeah.
I've got to be playing Highlander. And so that gets exhausting at times.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of energy. And so forever, absolutely not. For now, for now, I'm enjoying it. It is exhausting, and there have been times where I was much less enthused about it. Coming out of the Winter Lotus, I had an awesome time. Format's really good. The last points update went really smoothly. We had a good conversation about it. And so like I'm reinvigorated and re-enthused. If you'd asked me 2 months ago, I would have said I'm done. Where I am now, I'm a little more enthused about it, but I don't think I have that much longer in me, honestly.
Well, and there's something to be said about keeping the committee healthy as well in terms of people with new perspectives and mm-hmm. people who have played for X number of years or who haven't played for X number of years, but people who put up results are interested in the format. You know, it almost feels in a way like keeping, you know, your government representatives like need to be relevant and happy and committed to 100%. The format.
If I feel like I can't commit to the format, I can't keep playing, I should step down. But also it's important to keep the balance of perspectives and people on the format. You know, like I'm a super driven competitive player. That's like how I've always been. That's been like, in some ways, my role on the committee has to been that person. Other people need to be more engaged in the community in other ways to get balanced perspectives. So, you know, you have Pat, who's engaged mostly as a tournament organizer. Raj, who has done a lot of groundwork community level thinking in Adelaide. And so is like much more engaged in like what is a less competitive, more grassroots scene. And so balancing out those perspectives and viewpoints and what people want from the format is really important.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Do you have anything that you want to say to our lovely Highlander or would-be Highlander players at home?
Sure. If you want more information about Highlander, there's a website, 7.h.com. So Discord.au. Otherwise, there's a Discord you can find us on. I'm there all the time. And if you just have thoughts on the format or want to get in touch, I'm there all the time. I'm Michael Esperguy on the Discord or Spiderbite. Reach out to me anytime. I'm happy to have a chat. I love the format. I love talking about it. Get in touch.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure to have you on. Wonder how many more we have to start working our way through the rest of the Highlander committee now. With all that said, that's all we have for you today. New episodes release on Mondays at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. You can keep track of all of our releases at RaiseMTG on Instagram and Blue Sky. Until next time.